A project that I've been very keen to find out more about, given that it seems to have fallen away from the headlines a little bit, particularly since the federal election a couple of months ago, and that is the Daintree microgrid project. I'm fascinated by the concept of microgrids as technology develops. Things like battery storage eventually start improving and coming down in price. Is this the future for energy delivery? One man I was very keen to chat to, who is right in the thick of it, so to speak, is Lawrence Mason. Now, Lawrence is a third-generation Cape Tribulation resident. He also runs and owns the fantastic Mason's Cafe there at Cape Trib. Lawrence, we had a bit of a chat off-air. Very interested to get a bit of a progress update. I'm hoping to have a chat to Senator Nita Green next week. It seems they're still trying to gather some information, given that this project was announced and funded by the previous federal government, the Morrison government. Mate, your understanding of where that Daintree renewable microgrid is actually at?
At this stage, we've got a really well-known botanist here, Andrew Small, who's been in the area, and he's scoping out the area where the cables are going to go underground. Okay. And I know Andrew well, of course, because he was involved in the original buyback of the Daintree way back in the 90s. Mm. He used to run what's now known as the Discovery Centre. He's a very well-known botanist, and he's putting a lot of work into making sure they can get their required permits for the cabling. They've also got another chap here called Phil, who's been in the area recently, and he's starting to talk to businesses and residents about connecting
it all up. Now, it's about a $19 million project, as I said, funded by the previous federal government. They're saying that that will get an 8-megawatt solar farm, 20-megawatt battery storage, and a 1-megawatt clean hydrogen plant. When this thing is actually up and running, Lawrence, how much of a difference will it make to your house and even your business?
Oh, it's an extraordinary difference. People assume that these renewable energy systems that people have on houses up here are free. But of course, they're not, because, you know, the startup cost can be anything from $25,000 to $70,000 to put a wrap system on your house. They generally last less than 10 years before they need major repairs. We've just put in new inverters in a couple of our houses here. I put new batteries in a couple of years ago. My mother's about to put new batteries in. I think it's going to cost her $7,000 to $10,000 for the batteries when she puts them in. So it will make an extraordinary difference, because we should have electricity similar to everyone in the rest of the state regarding cost. I would correct you on one thing, though. The $19 million is what the government has put up. Private investment is going to have to make up the rest.
Right.
And I believe the likely cost is over $50 million for the grid.
There you go. Okay. $50 million. Be interesting to see. Well, I guess over the long term, that's probably a fair cost. And I guess what's the sense of what the local residents, local community up there are thinking about this project? Is there broad support for this microgrid?
Look, I believe so. There's always a vocal minority who say it's unnecessary or it'll cause rampant overdevelopment. But most people I know are reasonably excited about it coming. And I think in the business community, 100% of people are excited about it coming. Because we all struggle to produce electricity at a reasonable cost. And, you know, the other thing that annoys me in my business is I would obviously like to be carbon neutral in my electricity production. But because nobody would ever lend me enough money to put my own solar to battery system in, I'm stuck with diesel generators. That's an extraordinary polluting way of making electricity.
Does this microgrid, though, Lawrence, mean that you then no longer need to use diesel generators?
No, if the microgrid came, we would probably keep our one of our diesel generators, because we obviously have two for backup for a little while until we were confident in the system. But I would anticipate that we would no longer be producing our own electricity on the property. Or if I did, I would probably put a solar farm in and sell it off to the grid. This is something else we can't do, because everybody's got their own electricity production. There's no grid.
Yes.
And
yes.
I can't sell any excess solar anywhere.
And this will change that? You'll be able to?
Yes, that's right. I'd be able to put, say, for instance, a 60-kilowatt solar farm on an area I've had reserved for here. I wouldn't need any batteries, though, or any of the expensive stuff. I'd just be able to sell straight onto the grid like anybody else
in an urban area. Sell it back into the grid.
Yeah.
Do we know eventually how many homes or businesses, premises, this will power?
No, not exactly. You'd probably need to talk directly to someone like Richard Choneman from Volt Advisory. He would have a better idea, because they've done modelling, but I know that they're at the point now of approaching businesses and residences up here to see who wants to connect. And my understanding is you'll have three options. You'll have an option to connect. You'll have an option to have a box out the front for a later connection, or an option to be bypassed completely.
There you go. Is it on track to, I think, next year, 2023, it was due to be operational. Is it on track for that, do you know?
I think the 2023 was to turn sod. That's my understanding. Okay. And last I heard from Warren Inch was that by April 2023, they will be turning sod on the project.
Okay.
My experience with just about any project here, whether it's road building or whatever it is, always takes twice as long as what they're doing.
Yes.
So I'm sort of thinking, you know, 25, 26 is probably more logical. I guess I've done that so that I'm not disappointed. I'm one of these people who, you know, puts a negative spin on everything and then I'm happy if it comes earlier.
Pleasantly surprised if it happens earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
From what you know so far, what you, I guess, have heard what it will deliver, I mean, going forward, 10, 20 years' time, are these microgrids something that you could envision popping up in different parts of Australia, not just sort of precious places like the Daintree?
Oh, I think they're going to pop up in many, many places. Mm. I know the Woodjil Aboriginal community are looking at their own microgrid up
right.
there.
Right.
I've heard that Yarrabah's looking at it as well. Mm. Anybody who has enough sunlight or, say, like Woodjil, a river where they can perhaps produce hydro energy, would be mad not to be looking at these microgrids, especially with what I've read in the media recently about what's going to happen, you know, what's likely to happen to, you know, the main grid electricity prices over the next 20 years. You know, there's a possibility that communities like this could actually be producing cheaper electricity for themselves.
Very interesting indeed. Well, as I said earlier, hoping to have a chat to Senator Nita Green just to get this new Albanese government's take on this microgrid project.
We're obviously hoping that the Labor government's going to support this worthwhile project. And we're hoping they don't come up with the same lame excuses, because we have a very strict town plan here that protects the Daintree. More than half of the lots, as I understand it, have been bought back and put back into National Park as long ago as the 90s. And, you know, I'm hoping with all the rhetoric coming from the Albanese government that they back it up with actual action and get behind this project so it can happen as quickly as possible.
Very well said indeed. Lawrence Mason from Mason's Cafe, long-term resident up there in the beautiful Daintree. Thanks, mate, for your time on the King Review today.
Thanks very much.